Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, February the 13th. And today we're going to talk about the immigration debate starting this week over at the U.S. Senate. We're also going to catch up with the fact that President Trump is proposing ending the NPR PBS funding that has been going on for quite some years. So we're going to be doing, we're going to be chatting here in a second. We'll be joined by our friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. But I want to begin by directing you to a post that I have this morning over at the American Thinker called The Little Sister from Hell, where I talk about this really pathetic, I don't even know what word to describe, the attention and in some ways even fawning that this young woman from North Korea is getting. This is a young woman who we don't know how involved she is herself directly with the regime. I mean, I'm not saying that she's the one literally killing people or starving people, but she's part of the family. And she has clearly been a beneficiary of the lifestyle and the way that that family in North Korea has been running things. And for her to be getting all this attention, even some idiotic reporter even calling her the Ivanka Trump of North Korea or something like that, I mean, that's just crazy. That is just absolutely crazy. And it shows, frankly, it just shows a tremendous amount of ignorance on the part of whoever would make that comparison or bring that up. So, look, I'm glad that North Korea and South Korea are talking. I'd rather have that, frankly, than a war in the peninsula, because a war in the peninsula would be so devastating and so bloody and so bad that I'd rather have them talking. But I don't care if they talk, but let's remind the American people of who these people are. These people in the North are not nice people at all. I don't care if they send out their favorite little sister. Like, let me say hello to George. How are you, George?
Oh my gosh, I can't believe the situation that you're just describing. It's like my older brother was saying that it's like describing Fidel Castro wearing very nice looking fatigues.
Right.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's like the Marie Osmond of North Korea, you know? Something like that, you know? You know, a little cute little girl in the family, you know?
The family happens to be like the Corleones, but that's okay.
That's okay. Yeah, they're butchering half the country.
Well.
Yeah, they sure do. They got people starving to death in the country. The soldier who escaped recently, President Trump recently had a North Korean fellow who escaped risking his life. And here comes this little sister, you know, who is cute and she's charming and she's supposed to be our ticket to peace, I guess. It's absolutely – I don't know what it is, George. I mean,
well,
you know, the ratings
are down. Shallowness. Yeah,
it shows the absolute
shallowness of the media, of this, of whoever this so-called reporter is, who started this this avalanche of attention. I mean, it absolutely shows the shallowness of the reporters.
Right, and then there's even some people now. I don't know who did this, but I heard that some people were criticizing Pence or Vice President Pence for not shaking her hand or for not showing, I guess, attention to her, because Vice President Pence, to his credit, kept a distance from her, even though they sat her, I guess, right behind him.
Right.
But I tell you, I think it's sometimes important to remind these reporters, we want to watch the Olympics. We don't really care about your political opinions, guys. Keep that to yourself.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, a couple of topics I wanted to pick your brain on today. The immigration debate begins in the U.S. Senate. I don't know if it's in the House as well, but certainly in the U.S. Senate. And from what I understand, Senator McConnell has decided to open it up. He said, you know, just whatever you want to propose, it's wide open, which is fine with me, actually, because I think the more we hear from these people, the better, particularly the ones running for reelection, some of these Democrats in red states. But here's how I see it, George. They need 60, and they don't have anywhere near that right now. They've got 51 Republicans. Probably most of them will go along with President Trump on some kind of a resolution, but it's gonna require some collateral stuff like the border and all of that kind of stuff. And then you have 6 Democrats who I would say are pretty similar to the Republicans in that point of view. So that takes you up to about 57. That means there's about 43 or so Democrats who are DACA with no conditions. So this has no chance of passing. I mean, DACA without conditions has no chance of passing and may not even pass at all, George. What are you hearing?
I agree. I think, you know, to be honest with you, I think the president is the ultimate poker player. And I think what he has done by allowing this to be debated openly and getting McConnell to just, you know, throw whatever chips anybody wants to throw in there, I think that that's very, very wise, because we have seen that the folks that are on the far left are much less, much, much less willing to give or compromise than the folks on the far right. And, you know, we've seen time and time again where the far right has just been ignored. But the far left can't be, because they throw tantrums, they throw rocks, they throw toilet paper, they throw everything. And, you know, the left cannot afford, the Democrats cannot afford to ignore them. And I don't think they're going to get ignored. I think the situation is going to be one where this debate is not going to go anywhere because of an unwillingness by the Democrats to bend. I also feel that the Democrats, in other ways, don't want it to go away. They are milking this cow as much as they can. Mm-hmm. So between the two, between their desire not to let it go away and their desire to get everything right now immediately, I think the whatever is proposed is dead on arrival. I really do.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think that way too, because as I said, you've got 51 Republicans, and I think if they get the right deal, I can see them voting together. There may be a couple that won't, but I think for the most part they'll support the president, especially if they can get some things back in security and e-verify and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then you've
got
6 Democrats who are definitely going to be with Trump on this: West Virginia, Alabama, North Dakota, Montana, Missouri, Indiana. These 6 guys are not going to risk their re-election over DACA. I tell you that right now. So that brings you down to about 43 Democrats, which is way short than what they're going to need. But as you indicated, these Democrats have to listen to their left-wing base, which does a lot. I wish all they did was throw toilet paper, George, because at least that would be, you know, you can survive that. But they're going to go after Schumer. I mean, I feel sorry for Schumer. These people are going after Schumer with nuclear bombs. I mean, they're going after poor Schumer. And because I was thinking this, George, I was thinking about this. I want to run this by you and tell me if you agree or disagree. Let's imagine that I'm a dreamer for a second. Well, I am a dreamer, but I mean, the political definition of a dreamer. I've always been a dreamer. You know what I mean? You and I are dreamers. Everybody's a dreamer, but I'm just saying in this, that's right. In this political definition, let's say I'm, I don't know, 25 years old, whatever. And I'm looking at this proposal that Trump has made, And I say, okay, he's offering me to join in. I pass a few background checks, I guess. And I go in, I'm clean. I don't have anything on my record. I want to go to college. I want to stay here. And in 10 to 12 years, he's offering me the opportunity for citizenship. And he wants, let's say, E-Verify. That's not going to affect me because I'm going to be legal. He wants to build a border wall. That's not going to affect me because I'm already over here. He wants to go merit immigration. Well, that's not really going to affect me because I'm already over here.
Exactly.
And he wants to do away with the lottery, but I'm already over here. And so, I mean, and he wants to do away with chain migration. Well, I'll put up with that, you know, wait till I become a citizen. So it seems to me that what you're going to see, George, is that you're going to start seeing some cracks on the DACA brigade. People say, where do I sign?
Yeah, this is exactly.
This is a good deal, George.
Yep. Well, and I think that that's very much a possibility. I think that this whole, you know, this we saw some cracks already, a very, very visible one the other day when Nancy Pelosi initially said yes, and then when it was sent over to the Senate, all of a sudden the next day she filibusters it, or she gets up there for her 8-hour tirade. I mean, you know, it put a lot of egg on Schumer's face. So I think that we're beginning to see some of this, you know, cracking of this wall of leftist liberalism that some of these folks, are involved in. And I think that what we really need to do is watch how the left is going to respond to these folks, because Nancy Pelosi is, in my opinion, in the heartland of the left, of the left of the left of the left. I mean, that's where she is, and so she's got to play that game. Schumer,
right.
You know, Schumer is among the cheese and cracker and wine liberals,
right.
And so he's got to play that game. But,
right.
You know, if you play it too much, I mean, those cheese and wine and cracker folks, they'll take somebody who is undocumented in the country to cut their grass, but not to join their country club. So we shall see. We shall see how that all turns out.
Yeah, it just seems to me that at some point there, you know, when you put yourself in the place of a DACA person, young man or young woman, and you begin to see, you know, the options that they have. The options are you sign on Trump's offer, or you stay where you are, and staying where you are exposes you to deportation and everything else. I just think you're going to see some cracks. I think you're going to see some of these people say, wait a minute, I'm not going to support people who are not getting me where I want to be. And because we assume I don't pretend to know every dreamer, but I've spoken to some of them. We assume that they're all politically interested young men and women. In fact, most of them aren't. They just want to be legalized, and they're not really that big into politics. And so they're going to follow whoever takes them. It's like, you know, they're going to follow whoever takes them to the promised land. And the Democrats are not that party right now, George.
That's exactly right. This situation that we've got is one where, these folks need to understand. By these folks, I mean the DACA kids, as well as, in my opinion, the undocumented folks in general, as well as the Hispanic community in general. They all need to know to recognize how they are being played for politics by the Democrats once and for all, because it is very obvious, it is very much in evidence that that's exactly what is happening here, that the Democrats are playing this for political reasons, not for the best interest of the DACA of this specific group of people.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. George, I want to pick your brain a little bit longer today, but I want to take a little break and chat about my friend Carlos Guedes. And then after we come back with George, we're going to talk about NPR and PBS, as I mentioned in President Trump's budget proposal, he's cutting the funding for these two organizations. I support that, even though I like some of the programs. But before we get back to George, let me tell you what my friend Carlos Guedes. Carlos, you know, with Valentine's Day tomorrow, he's going to be pretty busy tomorrow at a couple of places playing. And Carlos is the guy who provides the music while you're having a nice dinner with your wife or your spouse or whatever it may be. So we're going to recommend that you check Carlos' Facebook page, because that's where he's got a huge schedule of where he's going to be all over tomorrow and all over the rest of this week. I know some people are probably going to celebrate Valentine's Day next Saturday. So he's got a lot of Valentine's Day appointments coming up at different restaurants around town. And go to his Facebook page, and you'll have a chance to see it all. It's fantastic. Wherever he goes, the food is great, and the background music is absolutely great. We get to play his music on the show, and that's a real treat for us, and we enjoy very much being a part of his success here in the Dallas area. Let's get back to our friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio. George, it's like raining, and not really hard raining, but chilly rain and chilly temperatures. What's it like down in the Alamo City?
It's the same thing. Same thing as what you're describing. We've got overcast skies, and it's been raining and drizzling and just kind of nasty today, and cold.
Yeah.
And cold.
Yeah,
that's above 50. For us, that's cold.
No, it's like that here. It's almost identical weather. We usually don't have identical weather except in July, when we're both complaining about the heat, right?
Yeah, right.
I got to ask you a quick question, though, about San Antonio before we get to the topic. I would love to see the Oakland A's, now that the Raiders are moving out of Oakland, I would love to see the Oakland A's move to San Antonio. The reason I say the Oakland A's is because both teams have always had problems with Oakland and the stadium. That's a horrible place to play any sport. And if you put the Oakland A's in San Antonio, you've got three teams in the American League West in Texas, you know, Houston, the Rangers, and potentially the San Antonio A's. Do you think, and I'm speculating, I don't know any information like this, I'm just speculating, but do you think that if there was a major league team that wanted to move to San Antonio, that they would build a baseball stadium?
Oh, gosh, in a heartbeat. The San Antonio has been after a major league team, football, mostly football, for the past, desperately, for the past 20, 25 years. Henry Cisneros went out of his way to build the Alamo Dome specifically to lure an NFL team. They have played a major league baseball in the Alamo Dome. But it just doesn't fit. It really doesn't. I mean, it's not a good size for that. On the other hand, they have discussed building a new 3A baseball stadium, and I know that which has gotten a lot of a lot of pushback politically. But if they were to do if they were to look at a major league baseball team coming to San Antonio, I'm sure that the community would just rally behind that and jump on it real quick.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be great for Texas baseball. It would be great for the fans, because you would have this, this three-way competition like you do in the NBA. And I think it would be great for all concerned, and, putting together a baseball stadium. I mean, they could start playing where the San Antonio team Missions plays right now, and then eventually move into a larger park. But anyway, I just wanted to pick your brain on that, because the A's or the Raiders are leaving Oakland, and I don't blame them for that.
And the A's would be fun. It would be fun to have a team like that. It would be a real good.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I think that would be a great organization, actually, to go down there. Well, let's talk a little bit. I have a post coming out tomorrow talking about PBS and NPR. President Trump has cut the funding on the new budget. Of course, that has to be approved. But George, my thinking about NPR and PBS is that some of the programming is okay. I mean, like, I confess that once in a while I listen to Morning Edition, and particularly when you're traveling and you don't know what the local stations are, it's usually, you know, easy to find NPR and listen to the news and so on. And so I listen to it from time to time, and I do watch a few PBS documentaries like The Civil War and Baseball by Ken Burns, and you know, I love The American Experience when they have that. But it's time for this organization to stand on their own, both of them. They need to go on their own, and if that means downsizing, it means downsizing, George. But I think it's time for them to go on their own. What do you think?
I agree. I, you know, one of the places that I worked at during the transition, I worked at three places. I worked first at Interior, and then I worked over at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is the parent corporation for public broadcasting for PBS and NPR. I was there for about 8 months with the transition team, trying to exactly do what you're talking about right now, trying to figure out how to cut the umbilical cord and get them to stand up on their own. It was during the Reagan period, that, as you recall, that PBS started getting funding from more private sources, and even started advertising a little bit. What they called what they didn't want to call advertising, they wanted to call it sponsorships, putting out sponsorships. And what would happen was that, you know, there would be a sponsor like Ford Motor Company that would come in and give large amounts of money. And at the end of a program, they would mention them, and that was the end of it. They didn't have a commercial, but they would mention them and thanking them for their money. Well, you know, that has been happening. I think the biggest problem that we as conservatives have, and that we had at that point, was not so much just with the programming. The programming tends to be, you know, okay. I mean, you know, you mentioned some excellent programs, like Ken Burns' Civil War and Baseball, the history of baseball. Those are great programs. The problem that we have is their radio and TV newscasts, their current affairs casts. Those are really, really, in my opinion, very, very slanted, and are not – those are the ones that we have the biggest problems with. And mm-hmm. It is time. It is time for them to. I mean, if they want to produce programming like that, why not do it on your own? Why not cut the umbilical cord and just get straight advertising? Let Ford, you know, just carry a commercial by Ford. Just carry a commercial by whomever. There's nothing wrong with that, and that's something that we have encouraged. And for some reason, it is resisted tremendously. Mm-hmm. By a lot of folks, particularly folks in the arts, that for some reason they don't want to do commercials because it's not artistic. Well, I got news for you. You know, that's how you make a living.
Well, that's right. That's right. And they can do it in different ways. Like right now, like you say, PBS right now will say at the beginning of the show, they'll say, you know, like the Ken Burns baseball series. It was actually, I think, General Motors who funded part of that. And they would say, you know, this program is brought to you by the Ford Foundation or whatever. I mean, they could do that. They could take breaks around during the programming and say, you know, we're going to hear from our sponsors. I mean, I think the public in the United States would have no trouble with that now. And if somebody does, well, that's their problem, you know, But my concern is, and you make a very good point about the liberal slant. I think that has been gradually tilting left for quite some time, because I don't necessarily think it was that way at the beginning. But it because I remember when NPR came into existence in the 70s, and I was living in Wisconsin and then going to school in Maryland in the late 70s, and I remember very much listening to All Things Considered in the afternoon, or Morning Edition in the morning. I used to like those shows. But now what's happening now is that those shows are still around, and they're generally decent. But now you have all these other little shows, you know, like this one on Sunday afternoons, you know, about Hispanics, and you know, every Hispanic is supposed to be madly in love with Obama. I mean, if you
exactly.
listen to that show, and I'm sitting there saying, wait a minute, why am I funding this? I mean, why don't they go out and get their own funding? So I think that's part of the problem, is that when the money, if all of a sudden, my sense with NPR and PBS has always been that if you cut the funding, that they would figure it out somehow. Now, they would have, may have to cut back some programming. They may have to cut back some stations, probably. But you could sell those stations. And look, an FM frequency in any market would be worth a lot of dollars. If they were to put, let's say, an FM frequency for sale, they would make a ton of money. Believe me, there's a big market for, particularly in a market like San Antonio or Dallas, an FM frequency is worth millions of dollars, George. So they could make a lot of money just selling those.
It is. I'm not sure exactly what the fear is by the artistic community, because that's where this real pushback comes of commercializing public broadcasting. They seem to think that if somehow they are going to be hamstrung if they do their art is commercialized. And again, you know, when you look at it, when you look at the number of TV stations and radio stations that are on cable nowadays, you've got arts, artistic networks. You've got networks specific for fixing a house, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For crying out loud, there's always a market if you produce it. But again, they don't believe in markets. I just don't think that these folks believe in markets. I don't think that they believe in competition, and I certainly don't believe that they think of advertising as a good thing.
Right. Well, they're going to have to figure it out, because I think most people agree with you and me, even if they like the programming, which I know that there's a lot of people who like it. I mean, these Sunday nights, they have all of these British programs. Those are very popular.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with those programs, but they can easily, you know, they can easily fund them. Somebody said to me one time, and I'll just leave you with this thought. Somebody said to me one time, this is a few years ago. This is during the time of the first Bush. So maybe when you were working in Washington, somebody said to me that time back then that the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour, that show that they had, I think it's 6 or 7 o'clock prime time, which is a very good show. I used to watch that show a lot. This is pre-cable, I guess, when a lot of this stuff was on. That McNeil-Lehrer would get something like 6 to 7 million people watching every night. And I would say to myself, if you have a show that gets 6 to 7 million people on TV, I mean, my goodness, why don't you just – you should be able to fund the entire network with just the advertising from that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And I think it's because they've never been forced to, George. That's all that it is. They're not they have not been forced to deal with the reality that, as you say, everybody's got to make a living.
Well,
and they're going to have
to
figure it out too.
Yeah, they remind me. They remind me of the 30-year-old kid that's a kid, you know, that's a 30-year-old that's living in your basement, who just can't find, you know, who just can't figure out what he wants to do with life. And, you know, he's afraid to get out and find a job. I mean, this situation that we've got, you know, with McNeil and Lear, in fact, that was one of the things that we used to, that I was working on when I got over mm-hmm. there to Washington in 81, was how to work with the TV program with McNeil and Lear to make it a little bit more balanced. And, you know, they resisted tremendously mm-hmm. of any government intervention, and I could understand that, and, you know, we left them alone. But you're right. What we've got now are so many talk shows, so many current event shows that mm-hmm. Have proliferated in radio and in TV that really don't do anything other than propose and send out the leftist message.
Right. No, I think that, you know, NPR and PBS, it's time for them to go private. And if it's such a good investment, then let them go out in the private sector. let them make it on their own. I think the time, you know, it's not a lot of money. I mean, when you look at the item on the budget, it's not a make or break type of item. But it is, it's more the principle of it, I suppose, not necessarily the amount of money. It's just the idea, you know, why are we funding television and radio? Why are we doing that? It makes no sense to me at all. Well, George, as always, thank you for your time. And
thank you.
Let's do it again soon. Let's do it again soon. Maybe the next time we chat, you know, Big Bird will have his own show.
We'll be talking from both sides of its beak.
That's it. Yes. That's it. Big Bird will be, he'll have his own show from Korea during the Olympics.
Yeah, there you go. All right, my man. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Thank you so much. Our good friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio. Always enjoy chatting with him and talking a little politics. Our two big topics today, of course, the immigration debate that begins in Washington this week. And I actually think, as I said before, I think Senator McConnell is doing it the right way. He's putting it all out and say, hey, propose whatever you want to propose, and let's have a lot of votes. I mean, that's the smartest way to do it. And with NPR and PBS, look, I have nothing against their programming. As I said, a lot of it is good. A lot of it I watch. But I think it's time for them to go private and to survive in the real world where you don't get subsidies, you get advertisers. And I think they're going to be just fine. If you know, a lot of their programming is good enough. I know lots of people who watch their programming. So they should be able to survive on their own quite well. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you later.